News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 31st of July, Anno Domini 2005. And you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Brendan Cooper.
And we'll be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, some interesting bits of trivia and facts and pieces of information.
We're now going into August. You realize
it is,
summer's
Mr.
half over?
Summer is half over, and the dog days haven't even started.
Yeah.
But it's about to be August, and we have something really interesting to say about the first week of August later. We'll talk about that a little later.
Oh, I got another thing that I want to talk about later that is going to impact all of us.
Every single one of us?
Every single. I don't care. Even if you don't own a computer, I guarantee it's going to impact you.
Wow. How cool is that?
Yep.
How cool is that? All right, we're going to go right to the phones. We're going to start with Bob from Pittsford, New York, who has a question about a second hard drive. Bob, what's your question?
I'm from Penfield.
Oh, Penfield. I apologize. My fault. Sorry.
I called a couple of weeks ago because I've got a laptop running XP, mm-hmm. and I had a System 32 problem, and it couldn't boot. You suggested that I get a new hard drive, put that in, and then run this one with my personal files on it through USB port.
Mm-hmm.
I did that, but I can't access my personal files because it says that I'm not the administrator, and those are the administrator's files. I can search. I do a search, and I can find them. And some of them I can click on through the search and open them.
So this is on the external drive?
That's right.
And you're running XP on the internal drive now as well, too.
That's right.
Sounds like you created a different username on the new XP drive, and XP is protecting it from letting you see a different username's files, which it's supposed to.
Well, it's the same username it is exactly the same username.
But is the system the same name?
The name of the computer.
Yeah, the name of the computer. Is that the exact same name as the previous?
That's the same also. But they're different drives.
Right, that
mm-hmm. Probably different size drives, too.
It's probably one of the internal user ID flags.
Yeah.
Usually this doesn't happen. Windows security doesn't really work that well.
Yeah, right.
And the username you've created now on the new internal drive is an administrator user.
I know there's a workaround,
right,
Bob, but right now, to be honest with you, I'm, drawing a blank. It's early. It's Sunday morning. And the brain cells aren't working that well yet. But I'll tell you what, if you email me.
Mm-hmm. We'll do a little digging.
I'll do a little digging and see what I can find out for you.
Okay.
Just email me the question to remind me, because we get a lot of folks emailing us and just to refresh my memory that we talked on Sunday, and I'll see what I can dig up for you, okay?
Okay.
I can do right now.
Can you give me the email address?
You can just right there on the Soundbites page. You can just click on my name, and it'll email me.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
On the Mac, there's a permission flag. You can say ignore permissions on an external volume.
Yeah.
Because physical access overrides any permission issue.
Like I say, I'm having a major brain cramp here, and
I have to admit that I'm a little behind the time myself at work. Yesterday we put in a brand new mail server. We actually Gabe did all the work. We all just stood around.
You supervised
and made. Yes, that's my job.
That's my job,
and that's what I did. I bought the pizza. That's my job, and that's what I did.
That's a critical thing.
Yep.
You got to keep the troops happy, because nothing worse. If the workers aren't happy,
Yep. Ain't nobody happy.
Will be happy. Right. Especially but it was, you when you get all your professors
well,
coming
that the
in.
Truth. Ain't that the truth? But it all worked. God bless Gabe. He got it all working. Bob was in, Gabe was in, Kelly was in, I was in. It was a little party. We had a pizza party. But we did. It was an amazing evening. First, you know, we've got gigabytes and gigabytes worth of email, and so first we had to back it all up, then we had to verify that we had it all backed up. Then we backed up the backup. Then when we had to verify that, and then came that frightening moment where you blow away the whole system
and cross your fingers and pray for the best.
Sure, and you know, we were all standing around all pretending to be calm about it. Oh, yeah, this will work. Hit the button. Nah, go ahead, hit the button. Well, wait a minute. Hold on. Just one more check. Did we get everything on our checklist? Because we had a little checklist. Yeah, go ahead. And then you could tell, as the thing rebooted up, you could hear every sound the drive made, and you knew that that was because nobody was breathing.
Oh, that's always.
And true. When it actually came up and started formatting the new drive, all was coming.
Until you folks out there, you know, we tell you constantly to back up your files. But until you actually have gone through it, been venturous enough to back up your system, wipe it out, and literally you will have this lapse of breathing.
Yeah.
Until it reboots and you've restored everything just to verify that, say, all these projects or all these great photos that you had that you didn't accidentally forget to do something and they're gone forever.
I think I might have found a solution for the previous caller, but I got to mention that even the best of us screw up our backups.
Oh, yeah.
My main company point-of-sale server with all our inventory and sales and data crashed last week. And we're thinking, oh, no problem. We'll just go to yesterday's backup.
Right.
So I opened the backup program. It hadn't been running in 2 weeks.
Oh, man.
And didn't tell us. And I had a triple I had three different backup programs running on this server. None of them ran.
Oh, man, no.
Right. Well, no, the three separate programs, all independent of each other, and for some reason, none of them ran. So we lost like 20 days worth of information, and we're all panicking.
Yeah, people have got to...
So it's not just, you know, it's what we preach here all the time, have a backup, but make sure it's working.
And for you folks...
look at the computer now and then and make sure the backup log
works. Well, the thing of it is, though, we should tell folks, though, is... They'll sit there and say, well, yeah, it's doing the backup. Well, any good backup program, I don't care which one that's out there, you can look at a log file.
Right, but you have to look at it.
Yeah, and just go in there, and it'll show the date, and then you can double-click on that, usually in most programs, and see that it backed up. If it didn't, it'll usually tell you there's errors in that in there, too, like NovaStore. That's one of the backup programs, along with, Nero. Just added backup to their new CD burning routine, and it's great. You can sit there and schedule it, but again, it creates a log file, and you can view that to see what files were backed up, which ones it had a problem with, and that's something you got to review every so often, because otherwise you could get in trouble, like Stig did.
Yep,
I did myself many years ago.
Oh, we've all done it, and it's a painful thing. But this all worked great. Now tomorrow morning, I have to go in early and remind everybody how to work the new server, and that'll be all good, and we're on our way. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright and Steve Ray, Brendan Cooper, me, Nick Francesco. We've got Frank on the line and Bob on the line and Maggie on the line, and we're going to talk to everybody. We've got some interesting things to talk about.
Got an answer for the permissions problem.
We have an answer for the permissions problem. Later on, we'll tell you what's coming up this week that's very exciting for us all. Back in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wham's Bob Lott. It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I guess I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Brendan Cooper.
I guess that's the clue right here. That's all of us. And we're here. Before we get any farther, I do want to apologize to everybody. I'll talk about the polls later. But I want to apologize to everybody for not putting the poll up in a timely manner.
I figured something was wrong when I logged on this morning.
And wasn't there?
It wasn't there for a second, and then I refreshed, and wait a minute, I'm voting, and I'm number two?
Yeah, right.
Whoa.
Well, what happened, like I said, I was at RIT all night long, and I just completely forgot about it. Normally, I do it early in the week.
Yeah.
But I wasn't inspired. And as you can tell from this poll, I wasn't all that inspired to begin with. But then, of course, I come downstairs, and my wife tells me what's coming up this week, and we'll talk about that later. And that would have been a great poll, but it was too late. It was already there. People had voted, so I left it. But
it was only me.
Well, I didn't know that, did I?
You could have called.
I should have called. It's my fault. I apologize.
Jeez,
it'll never
Louise.
Happen again. But it really was this week. I forgot to do it all week. I usually leave it till late because I just wasn't inspired. And I got up this morning. And I thought, well, I wonder who's in the poll. And I hit the button, and there was no poll. And I thought, ah! And I'm so brain dead. I wasn't at all. But the poll is up. 31 people have already voted. 34 people have already voted. Nobody's voted for the Macintosh yet. That's unusual. But we'll get to that later, and we'll talk about that later. But I did want to apologize to everybody for that. We're going to go back to the phones.
Hang on a second.
You've got that answer. Of course you do.
Something to try for changing permissions on an external hard drive, that when you set up a brand new Windows system, it thinks it's a new computer, and its users can't see users on other computers because that's sort of the way Windows Security tries to work.
Right.
So with physical access to the drive, you can do anything. So when the drive is connected to your computer, open My Computer and right-click on the drive itself, letter F or G or whatever drive it is, and go to Properties. In that window, go to Security and make sure there's a checkbox so that everyone has full control.
Yeah.
And so that will let everyone access the files. Then go into the Advanced button. And there's another checkbox that says replace permission on all children or child objects, something like that, which then goes down into all the subfolders on that drive and changes the permission. So
which where most of his documents are going to be.
Right.
Now, and that's going to take a while because it's going to walk the tree of all the folders and subfolders and sub-subfolders.
Mm-hmm. Several hundred thousand files.
And then go to each file and set the permission. So that's going to take a while, but let it crank.
Yep, and do it. So.
You know, be patient, Bob. Let it crank, and you'll get there. Nice catch. Nice catch, Steve.
Good one.
Our next caller is Frank, calling from Rochester, New York, and you have an internet problem, Frank.
Hi. When I log on to the internet and then walk away for a short period of time and come back, I have to log on again.
That's normal. What happens is your ISPs will time out and hang up the phone on you so that someone else can get in.
Are you dial-up or?
DSL.
DSL.
Well, then you're not logging onto the internet.
Well, I have to click my name and put my password in.
What's your service provider?
Oh, Frontier.
They don't require login.
Yeah.
None of the DSL or cable internet services require a login.
What are you logging into somewhere using your browser?
Or are you logging into, say, the Frontier page that has all your information and all that type of stuff?
No, let's just say I'm on USA Today, and mm-hmm. I walk away for about 10 minutes or 5 minutes or so. Then I come back. I have to click on my name again, and then it says password.
Right, and that's at USA Today. That's on their site.
Oh.
Every site that you go to where it requires a username and password sets a timeout.
Okay.
The point being, well, twofold. First, in case you're on a public terminal and walk away, you haven't left yourself logged in so somebody could steal, your identity by sending maybe mail as you or whatever. And secondly, because that just, their servers would get bogged down with tens of thousands of people logged in 24/7, and they're trying to keep all those connections open. So that's what they do, and it's not your DSL provider, it's not your internet service, it's those individual pages. So, for example, if you were a member of Ask Nick at AskNick.com, when you log in as a member, I set a cookie on your system and a timeout for that cookie, so that again, after a half an hour or an hour or two, that
with
no keystrokes of any sort, without moving from page to page, which is what refreshes that cookie, you get logged off because otherwise I just have thousands of people logged on 24/7, and it would be very confusing for the system to keep track of who's where.
One of the things you can do is that most websites like that have a username and password will often have a little Remember Me button, and that will save your username and password on your computer so that the next time you click on any link on that page, it doesn't ask you the username and password again. It just logs you back in automatically. The danger of that, again, as Nick said, is someone else can walk up to your computer and
BU.
BU. Order stuff. You know, so for Amazon, if you leave yourself logged into Amazon or eBay, someone can walk up to the computer, buy stuff on your credit card because you're logged in as you.
Yeah, so
if your computer in your own home and you're not worried about that.
Right. If you're the only person who uses that computer or you implicitly trust everybody else who uses it, then you can say, remember me. But if it's a public terminal or you don't want other people to be able to log in as you, don't click that button. We're going to take another break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright. With Steve Ray, with the great Brendan Cooper sitting in for Rob Linton. We've got Bob on the line. We've got Maggie on the line. We've got John on the line. We'll be talking to all of you folks. When we come back, I promise you, I really, really will tell you what exciting, cool new thing is coming up this week. And we'll bring you lots more questions and news and views on the greatest computer show in the known universe. And you all know that sound bites on 1180 WHAM.
Hi, this is...
can answer your questions. Back to more sound bites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Brendan Cooper.
And this is Sound Bites. And I've been promising you, I've been teasing you, telling you what that I was going to tell you what this week is all about. Starting tomorrow, August 1 through August 7, is Turn Off Your PC Week. Yes, that's at pcturnoff.org. pcturnoff.org. Steve will have that link up in just a moment or two. He's frantically...
He's got it at the moment.
He's got it already. See, he's that far ahead of me. PC Turnoff Week, the basic idea. It's for kids, not really for adults.
Adults would get fired.
Right. No, you know, nobody's suggesting you go into work your boss, I'm sorry, I can't do anything this week because I have to turn my PC off.
That wouldn't fly.
I'm sorry. Yeah, right. Nick said turn your TV. I know, and it's not going to happen. But this is for kids. The PC Turnoff organization was founded to make parents aware of the risks associated with excessive computer use by their children and provide information to help guide them. Kids spend way too much time doing...
Although I know some adults that should do that.
Well, isn't that the truth? It's true. It's true for all of us. They say excessive computer use contributes to lower grades in school, weight problems, social isolation, attention problems, and stress-filled family life. The benefits of being off the computer include enjoy quality family time, improve family communication, more outdoor play, additional time for reading, thank you, experience the outdoors more and less stress and noise. We all spend, I think, personally, way too much time on our computers, and that includes me. But it's pretty amazing how much time we spend on our computers and how much time we should be spending off our computers. They've got all kinds of great ideas. They have a book called 365 Unplugged Family Fun Activities. Play family games, go fly a kite, go do a picnic, spend an evening out stargazing. This would be the perfect time. Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
Nature Deficit Disorder.
Solve that this week.
I think it's this week or the beginning of next. I'd have to look it up. But you can go to the Space Shuttle page, and they have a schedule. And you can look at the schedule, and you pick Rochester, New York, and it'll tell you the different days and times that the Space Shuttle at night we'll be flying overhead that you can see it.
We saw the space station a few months ago down at RIT's observation platform. The observation platform on John Street, right across the street from a housing complex and really, really bright street lights,
yeah. Well, when that
was in the middle of nowhere when they built it.
Yeah. Exactly. A friend of mine had a great observatory. Three-story observatory with dome, movable dome, in his backyard out in Penfield. Long ago, before he moved. And back in those days, there wasn't a lot of light pollution. As time went on, there got to be more. It got kind of depressing after a while. But it is PC Turnoff Week. Help your child turn off the computer and stop playing games and stop spending time on IM and stop doing all that stuff. Yes, I know. It's great. It's great for their typing skills, and it's great for their hand-eye coordination. But certainly during the school year, it's great for researching papers and doing all that sort of stuff.
But well, you know what it doesn't help with, though?
What?
And we've said this before, is their handwriting.
No.
Yeah, spelling has gotten atrocious.
That could be a whole
handwriting
issue.
Is terrible.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, my handwriting is horrible. My spelling is still good, but my handwriting is just absolutely horrible. I can't read my own handwriting.
That's why I print.
Yeah, yeah.
The only thing I write is sign is my name. Everything else I print.
Yeah.
And I have since high school.
Yeah. But it's time. This is help your kids. Help your kids do this. Go to pcturnoff.org. Check it out. They have discussion forums. They have the whole thing about what it is and what it does. And I think it's a great idea. You know, spend some time. And I suppose it's kind of hypocritical. We're a computer show, and I'm telling you to turn your PCs off. But more important than the computer is the people. And spend time with your friends. Spend time with your family. Spend time with your kids. You know, take a day off from work. Jeez and crackers. The place won't fall apart if you spend one day at home with your kids. Take them to a movie. Take them on a picnic. Take them to... We have great event. We have great stuff going on here in town. There's the Rochester Museum and Science Center. There's the Strong Museum. There's just wonderful things in this town to do with kids. And I don't mean necessarily take them down to the local, you know, arcade and let them play games there. Get them out doing something interesting and fun. Take them to a baseball game.
Hilton Carnival.
Take them to the carnivals. Take them all those places. Get your kids.
Spencerport Canal Days is going on. The football camp is just opened up yesterday, so you can go down if you're a football fan. Go down and watch that. I mean, like you say, there's a lot going around different, you know, parts of the city.
Lots of great things that you can do. Now, why don't you? I'd love to hear from all of you out there. Call in and tell us what you would do analog with your family as opposed to digital. You know, if you've got kids, tell me what you'd be interested in doing. In the meantime, we'll go back to the phones. We'll talk to Bob from Greece, who seems to have an advanced options menu problem. Bob, do you have kids?
Yes, they're grown. However, I have four grandchildren.
There you go.
And two of which live here in Rochester.
Uh-huh. They can get you into trouble.
Take them to the zoo.
There you go. Perfect, Bob. Perfect. Take them to the zoo. Spend a day walking around. Show them the stuff at the zoo. Let them see the animals. That's a great idea.
Go on a hike. That's another thing you can do. There's a lot of places you can walk in the parks and so on. Go up to the beach.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
All righty. Thanks.
I have some questions involving the advanced options menu. First of all, you get there by tapping the F8 key when you boot up.
Now, Okay.
Mm-hmm. I get a little message that says keyboard error. Is that normal to get that prior to going
Because you're hitting it too many times and depending on the system.
Or too soon.
Yeah.
There's a very brief window of opportunity. If you hit the key too soon, you get these keyboard errors and it doesn't work. If you hit it too late, it doesn't work.
Well, normally on most machines, once it starts clicking up, you know, you see something flash on the screen, then you can start hitting it. But if you start hitting it the minute you turn it on, it's doing a keyboard check.
Okay, then I probably am starting too soon.
Yeah. After the memory count and before the Windows logo.
Okay.
It's really a very, 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 very brief moment.
Well, let me continue with another question. Now, I did get into the menu okay finally.
Mm-hmm.
This is involved, of course, with the good old security tangle because you guys recommend the procedure is to go into safe mode.
Right.
And, of course, safe mode is something you're going to need other times perhaps, too.
Right.
Well, there it is on the screen, the advanced options menu, and I hit the up or down arrows to move the highlighter, and it doesn't budge.
Advanced?
I tried it over and over again, and I would get the screen.
No, you're too far.
You're too far into it.
That's the Windows advanced options. You want the boot up options before that.
When you reboot your machine, you turn it on. And you hit the F8 key.
Yes.
You should then get a screen, and option one is safe mode. Option two is safe mode with networking. Option three is a
safe command. Mode command prompt.
Command prompt, and then it goes down, down, and down. You should be selecting option number one.
So what you're seeing is after Windows starts loading, it asks you to, you can hit F8 to go into the advanced setup, which gives you last known good boot or repair Windows.
Yeah.
Yes,
so that's right. So you're hitting the F8 too late for that screen.
I don't want that
screen.
One.
Right. Yeah, you want way before that
this
one.
This is where it appears up in the upper right-hand corner with those options.
Right. You want it when you first turn on the machine. Like I said, give it a second. You start seeing stuff going on the screen. Start hitting the F8 key.
Right, before the Windows icon comes up.
Mm-hmm. And you'll then get this screen. It's a black screen, and option number one is safe mode. It'll say right at the top of the screen.
You're not even in graphics yet. It's still all in text. Bob, we got to go. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Brendan Cooper, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Computer talk that you can understand. Now back to Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Brendan Cooper.
And this is Sound Bites. Before we go back to the phones, and we have Maggie and John and Richard on the line, I want to talk about a couple of things in the news. I mentioned this only briefly last week, but it's an amazing thing. There was a Russian spammer named Vardan Kushnir. He's been notorious. He's the number one spammer in Russia. He had something called the Center for American English, and they've been spamming people all over the place. He sends out spam. It says, you know, the title of the email message is cheap sex services, and it gives the center's telephone number and all kinds of stuff. They've been talking about anti-spam laws basically because of this guy. But the practice is still legal in Russia. Kushnir always maintained his right to spam. Just last week, he was found bludgeoned to death in his Moscow apartment. This happened a week ago today. Killed by repeated blows to the head. The public prosecutor there has yet to establish a motive for his murder. I think I can name a good 350 million people who had a motive, but they are treating the case as murder.
They were spamming them back?
Yeah, right, exactly. On the other hand, Russia's Interior Ministry reported about 2,000 unsolved murders in the first half of this year. So, I don't necessarily know that I would condone.
Not much time will be spent on that one.
Well, I don't know that I would necessarily condone bludgeoning spammers to death. Although certainly we've all had our fantasies. This is what we'll see next. Is the next violent video game will be find and bludgeon the spammer. I'll guarantee you that.
And, it's like that commercial for the airline miles where the guy won't give him any airline miles. So I'm coming to find you.
Oh, yeah.
Right,
wearing a big yellow shirt.
Right. And before we go back, I do want to one other quick thing. This was actually reported by my good friend Lee Drake on his website, leedrake.com. There's a new, a fairly new, actually, email worm that has an interesting new trick up its sleeve. Once it infects a user, if they have MSN Messenger installed and they're connected to the internet, it spreads itself to other users, other MSN Messenger contacts, by pretending to be that user and sending them itself as an attached file. It also will try to imitate the other people you have on your contact list and send stuff to all of them. It'll steal passwords from your IM accounts, transmit those passwords to the author, giving them databases of thousands of potential victims for viruses and keyloggers and all that other stuff. So be very careful who you accept not just instant messages from, but whether or not you click on the links, because it'll come with a link and it has names like check out what I just found on some stupid website, or dude, check this out, it's awesome, or LOL, look at this, I can't explain it in words. So be real careful about what you find in your, not just your email. We've harped for years. Don't click on email links. If you absolutely must view your email in HTML format, refrain from clicking on the links. Don't do it. Now we have to add, if you absolutely insist on viewing your instant messaging in HTML format, don't click on the links.
Even if it's from someone you know, because they might have got suckered or spoofed.
Or somebody they know got spoofed. Like this it's called the Chode B virus, and we were talking about Chode earlier.
Yes.
It's called the Chode B virus, and it not only tries to pretend to be the person who got infected, it also pretends to be the other people in their contact list. So it could be a friend of a friend of a friend who actually is infected.
And one of the other things we also have to stress on, that if in the email there's a click here to remove your name, Do not.
Never click on the remove button. Never.
All that is a counter to the spammer saying, I got a live one
here.
Yeah,
it just proves you're the sort of person who will click on links in email. And that makes you golden to them. Never, ever remove yourself from a mailing list because you're not going to get off. All right, here's our next caller, Maggie, patiently waiting on the line in Fairport, New York, who wants to talk about memory, assuming I remembered that correctly. How are you, Maggie?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. And if you have children, where would you take them?
If I had children, I would probably take them to the water park in Canandaigua.
What a great idea. Cool. What a great idea, particularly in this weather.
It's been a great summer for it.
Yeah. And I don't know, I truly don't know any kid who wouldn't turn off the computer to go play in the water.
Yeah.
Particularly
on
a hot day. Absolutely right. Great idea, Maggie. What's your question?
Well, I picked up a computer, a used computer for my grandchildren, mm-hmm. so they could play their games on it and not be tying up their parents' computer.
Sure.
And it's the monitor is in great shape. It's got great speakers built in. It's a Dell. It works fine.
Mm-hmm.
It has horrible memory. It's only got 64 RAMs of memory.
Yep.
Ooh. What
now,
operating system?
Harry Potter, but that's about all I can download on this thing.
Right.
Can I buy memory like at a, you know, Staples or someplace that will accommodate this?
How old is the machine first?
See, that's what I don't know how old.
Right. You're going to have to
make the decision.
Right. You're going to have to go to a memory vendor that knows exactly what memory your computer needs, because you could buy any stick of RAM off the shelf and it won't work.
Right. Your best bet at this point, Maggie, is to take the computer to a reputable dealer and let them upgrade the memory. Because first, they'll know exactly what kind of memory, and second, they'll be able to test it.
Plus, the program that she's running, depending on the operating system, might not even work.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, if the computer's too old, 64 megs might be all it can take.
Yeah.
So the best bet is to take it to somebody. Now you can go to our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. And both Steve and Dave's shops are listed there. There are lots of other really good, reputable people in the phone book. Your best bet at this point is to take it somewhere. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Brendan Cooper. We have both Richard and David on the line. David, high on the top. A mountaintop in Pennsylvania. I'm Nick Francesco, and you are, of course, listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
If you missed answering your computer questions for over 15 years, it's Sound Bites with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Brendan Cooper.
And we've got Richard on the line. This is Sound Bites. I should probably mention that at some point. And then we have Richard on the line from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Richard. You have a question about Kodak Shareware.
Yes. Good morning. I enjoy your program.
Thank you. And if you had kids, where would you take them this week?
I'd probably take them walking down the canal trail.
Oh, cool. Yeah, and it's so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It is. Here's my problem. My Kodak camera came with 3.0 Kodak Shareware, which installed, and it was working.
Mm-hmm.
But then I reached a point where I tried to download my pictures from the camera, and a wizard would say Shareware cannot complete the task. So I deleted that program, and I went to the Kodak website, and I got their latest version, which is 5.0. I downloaded that, and it still says cannot complete task. And then there's a little wizard that says, well, click on setup and then push this repair button, and that'll take care of it. Well, I did that, and it still didn't. I'm no further along. Do you have any answer for me?
Well, it depends on a number of things. First, my first question is, how much space do you have on your hard drive?
Well, I can't recall exactly, but I should have quite a bit. I should have enough anyway. I don't have a real lot of things on the hard drive.
Mm. What operating system?
Pardon me?
What operating system?
Okay, Kodak XP.
Windows XP, perhaps?
Yeah, Windows XP.
Yeah, okay.
How much memory?
Quite a bit. Let's see. Oh, I'm sorry. I just can't remember right now. But, you know, it's a Dell computer, and it's only a couple years old.
Then it probably doesn't have enough memory.
Oh, you think so?
Most of the computers in that era were only 128, maybe
256.
I think this is 256.
Yeah,
that's not enough. You should start out with at least 512.
512?
The problem could be not in the Kodak software, but in the Windows software, not mounting the camera. So the codec software can't complete your import because Windows isn't telling it there's a camera
there. Have you been doing the updates to Windows XP?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
I think it's, call it the Plus 2 package or something.
When you connect this camera, does it connect via USB?
Yes.
It's possible also that if your machine is that old, it's USB 1.1.
Mm-hmm.
And if the software requires 2.0, it's not going to complete the task
right.
either.
Do you hear a little chirp when you plug in the camera? When Windows detects a USB device, it will do a little chirp.
Well, yeah, and there's a little icon that comes up and it says has detected, hardware or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And then it should specifically say detected codec camera, the model of the camera, and then should say your hardware is ready to be used.
Oh, really?
If it's not saying that, the problem is in Windows, not the codec software.
Right, and it may be that that although you loaded the shareware to do the pictures, you didn't load the drivers for the camera itself.
Which is part of the EasyShare program.
Right, you need to download, you need to check that and make sure that you've got that going. We got to go back on the other side of the news with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Brendan Cooper, Nick
and
Francesco.
I got something that everybody's going to want to listen to after we come back.
On Sound Bites.
It's going to affect you all.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180. The Choice 1 toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180 or *1180. A free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Brendan Cooper.
And you are indeed listening to Sound Bites. Now, every once in a while, we try to bring you newsmakers here on this show, people who are not us. Is
yeah.
really, I think, the best way to put that. We have a guest here. Dave, is it Koretz?
Yeah, Koretz.
Koretz, I apologize. I'm terrible at this news. And he is the CEO. We actually got the CEO of Blue Tie Incorporated. And,
here in Rochester.
Here in Rochester, one of the great companies. Do you mind if I call you Dave?
Yeah, please.
Okay, tell us about Blue Tie.
So Blue Tie, we started off as a company really focused on the small business market. And our goal was to be able to give companies an alternative to spending tens of thousands of dollars buying servers and software. So from us, they spend a few dollars per user per month,
mm-hmm.
and they get email and collaboration for all their employees.
Nice. So in terms of, they're at bluetie.com, by the way. Blue tie as in wearing a tie that's the color blue. And for example, you offer email, a gigabyte of business class email with antivirus and anti-spam and all that other stuff. For what, $3 a month-ish? And,
yep, $2.99.
There you go.
We also have a collaboration solution, which looks more like a Microsoft Exchange server, and that's about $7.99.
What's nice about it is it's ideal for the first person that's traveling. I mean, if you've got to travel and you've got to be able to get at certain files, I like the capabilities of being able to put your files up on your server, which is secure, and be able to get to them along with the email anywhere in the world.
And your calendars and your contact list and all of that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, you can always check it. You can allow other people in there to update the calendar and actually keep you in sync.
Yeah, we have a lot of companies that use it to keep their employees connected if they have multiple offices or if they have people that work from home or sales organizations on the road.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I just turned one client on to you folks because he's literally traveling all over the world. He's here in the U.S. He might be in Mexico. He might be in Brazil. And he had the misfortune of losing his laptop and a lot of his files. And I says, have I got the solution for you? And this is a great solution that he can get through, get up to your site to get his important files and not have it on a local machine.
Right.
Yeah, we have several customers that use it instead of trying to manage their own Exchange email server, which can be a very daunting prospect and require full-time staff.
Right. Now, you guys are local. You're a Rochester-based company.
Yeah, we're headquartered in Bushnell's Basin. Yep. We have offices in Sydney, Australia, and we're about to open London in the next 60 days.
Cool. And tell us a little bit about the company. How did you start it? What obviously you found an open niche that needed filling, and there you are.
Well, it's funny because when we found it, it was non-obvious. I know you guys have been on the radio for a real long time. Mm-hmm. And back in the days, everyone said no one's going to ever buy anything on the internet. You know, it's all going to be free.
Yeah.
So when we started the company, no one was convinced that people were ever going to pay for anything on the web. And to make matters worse, they also said to us that there was no way we could actually build an alternative to exchange that could even be delivered over the web. They said it was technically impossible. So we had a few things going against us when we started the business, and we've been around for 6.5 years. We've not only figured out how to deliver the service over the web, but we actually figured out how to replicate with Microsoft Outlook.
Wow.
Experience they're familiar with.
Yeah. And we know how difficult that is and how expensive exchange is to maintain.
Yeah.
So basically, I can take my Windows PDA and sync it up to BlueTie and keep my stuff online.
Yeah, and if your Outlook ever fails or if your PDA ever fails, all you do is reinstall it, and it goes right back down from BlueTie to your own computer.
Nice.
You never have to worry about data loss again.
Nice.
And you were just featured in a major magazine not too long ago, if I remember reading correctly.
Yeah, we've been featured in Forbes and Inc., among others, New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, so a bunch of the major publications.
It just sort of verifies that, you know, sticking with your beliefs really pays off sometimes.
Yeah, it's worked out incredibly well for us. In fact, we actually, about a year and a half ago, expanded our business. We used to really focus exclusively on small businesses,
mm-hmm.
but then all of a sudden, all of these ISPs that offer, you know, the free webmail as part of their DSL or cable,
right,
started realizing that their mail wasn't matching up to what Google and Yahoo and Hotmail were giving away for free.
Right.
So they've actually come to us and asked us to private label our product and allow them to offer to their customers under their brand.
So what we should tell for the average user out there, then, you're offering a product, like you said, for $8 a month that will allow them to do their email. They can handle a calendar. They can do off-site storage of files that they can now access wherever they are. You know, say you're in a cafe through wireless internet or anywhere in any country, with just a couple clicks, and be there and have that information right at your fingertips, all for $8 a month.
Exactly.
And it's secure. In other words, it's going to be filtered out of any spam, any viruses, all that they don't have to worry about. Which, with like we were saying before, with these companies with Exchange, it's an ongoing battle. They literally have usually a team of folks,
yeah, right,
constantly maintaining them.
Yeah, email keeps getting more and more complicated and harder to run. Mm-hmm. So first it was antivirus, and then, you know, seemingly that got better, but then it got replaced with spam, which was even worse.
Yeah.
And now you have phishing people to worry about.
Yeah, right. And you guys, now what's really nice about this for the average home user is you guys worry about the system administration. You worry about the security. You worry about the safety. You worry about the backup. You worry about the encryption. It's all being done for you.
Yeah, the goal is to deliver incredibly simple collaboration. So it's to make it easy enough that people actually use it.
Right. Now, in terms of collaboration, and I apologize because I've never used your site, and I apologize for that. It's email contacts, calendaring, and instant messaging, right?
And file storage, file sharing as well.
File sharing,
right?
For the $8 a month.
Now I can do this for my computer. I can do this for my PDA. I can do this for my web-enabled phone. Can I do it from all of those places?
Yeah, you can use Outlook on your desktop. You can actually use BlueTie's web product from any computer in the world with internet access, be it Macintosh, PC, or Linux. Mm-hmm. And then we also have support for mobile devices. So you can actually get real-time access directly through your mobile phone. You can also sync your Palm, Pocket PC, and even push on and forward with it to your BlackBerry.
Wow, nice. So the other thing is, if I'm at a vendor site somewhere, and, you know, and I say, well, when do you want to meet? Oh, man, I don't have my calendar with me. I can log on using their web browser, and there I am.
Exactly. And if you want to schedule four other people to join that meeting, all you do is click on a button. It'll instantly go out and check their calendars, take into account the hours they're working, the meetings they have, and automatically find the first time everyone's free at the same time.
Oh, how nice is that?
Shared calendars is a huge thing that we're seeing a lot in small businesses, and, and the typical solution so far has been $10,000 for an exchange server.
Yeah, exactly.
And they maintain this, and like you said, you know, you can sit there and give people permission to, you know, make changes to your calendar that you want to.
So you the biggest problem we've seen on top of that is, you know, they spend the $10,000 to buy it, and they, you know, normally with a car or other purchases, you spend it once and then it just works.
Right.
But with Exchange, we've had customers come to us and say, listen, I've been down for the last 10 weeks on email.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to move to something easier. So ongoing administration is the painful part.
Well, there's you buy the server, which isn't cheap. You buy the software.
Ain't
for this
cheap.
This is for Exchange. Mm-hmm. You buy the software, which isn't cheap. Every user has to have a CAL, an access license. That's not cheap. You need a system administrator who's pretty much full-time access or Exchange. That's not cheap. And instead of that, now they can go to your service, particularly for a small business with 2, 5, 10, 20 people. They really can't afford to do any of that. And
exactly.
Now they can come to your folks, and for a few bucks per user per month, they get it all.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a lot simpler and a lot easier to use.
That's wonderful. It looks like a terrific product. It looks like and people can manage their own stuff because there's a manager. There's a little control panel that you get
online.
Got a lot of
features. I've been playing around with it, and like I say, you know, not having to worry about doing that maintenance for a lot of folks. That's a big relief right there. You know, like you're saying, if you've got a small company, whether it's 10 or 20 people and they're out on the road and you've got to stay in sync, this is a perfect way of doing it and eliminating one employee because now you don't have to maintain all the schedules and the maintenance on keeping the spam out and everything else.
Especially small companies, the server administrator is the one guy who knows a little bit about computers. So in addition to all their regular work, they also have to maintain the computers.
Yeah. Right, you're really a part-time administrator, and we all know that doesn't work.
Yeah.
But then, also, in terms of this, if a lot of salespeople go out with laptops and stuff, you lose that laptop or it gets broken or whatever, and you've lost it all if you didn't back it up. Here, if all that stuff is up online, Blue Tie backs it up. Blue Tie makes sure you've got it. And all you have to do is go somewhere else and log in, and there's all your stuff.
Exactly. We've had a lot of people come to us that have simply said they feel that IT is confusing and overwhelming, and our goal was to really make it simple. So we allow them to be able to administer their employees without having technical knowledge. So if you want to add a user to the system, they can do that in 30 seconds without having to call Blue Tie or without having to have an IT guy on staff.
Right. And for a mid-size or large company, who cares? We got those. But for a small company, and I'm talking 2, 5, 10 people, they can't afford that all the time. And so having something like this available to them makes a lot of sense. That's great.
I like the thing here that their main data center is under guard and has bulletproof walls.
So it's either to protect people coming in or the system administrators that they have getting a little nuts sometime about 3 a.m.
Well, it's funny. The facility we're in, not only does it have guards, it actually, when you walk in, it actually seals you into a man trap that takes your picture.
Oh, cool.
And so the simplest way to put it is that's a $300 million facility. We also have a data center here in Rochester. We built a second one that just went live.
Wow.
And the important thing is that no small business is going to be able to afford the fire suppression, the biometrics, and all the technology that we put in place.
Right.
So they get the value of it without having to pay for it.
Yeah, that's cool. A big deal now. I've been reading a lot of that about fire protection for server rooms because you can't use water. Otherwise, who cares if the fire? Yeah, who cares if the fire's out when your computers are all ruined?
Right. The problem with halon, of course, is it's poisonous gas to humans.
And it's so there's a new system that's been coming out that's not poisonous to humans and will maintain the electronic integrity, but it's a little more expensive.
Right.
It looks like it's a non-conductive fluid that looks like water. So I've seen these demos where they drop the computer in this fish tank full of water.
And it keeps working.
And it keeps working, yeah.
Right. But what Blue Tie has done is made that sort of technology available to that 1, 5, 2, 10 person business. And that means that, you know, and a lot of this stuff, it's a cost of doing business. You're going to have to do email. You're going to have to do collaboration. You're going to have to do backup. You're going to have to do all this stuff anyway. And you look at your return on investment. You know, what does it cost you to do it yourself, and how much do you get out of that? What does it cost to have somebody like Blue Tie do it, and what do you get out of that? And it looks like ROI on this is pretty good, actually.
Yeah. But what a lot of folks don't realize, and Dave's got a good point here going after the small businesses, is that right now alone in Rochester, 70% of the businesses here in Rochester are all small businesses. Because big business is going away, and if you're starting it up or going with, you know, like you say, under, say, 25 employees, this is a great solution, and it just saved you a heck of a lot of money if you're a new business.
Yeah.
You know, the most amazing part about it is that historically, throughout technology, it's always been a big business, you know, really buys something first, and then a decade later, finally that technology is available to small businesses.
This is
the first time in history that trend has flipped.
Yeah, yeah. This is Dave, this is great. I really, really, really want to thank you for coming on and talking about Blue
Much.
Tie. For those of you who are interested, it is at bluetie.com. That's Blue Tie as in I'm wearing a tie, and it's blue. It's a great name. I got to tell you, the name is great.
And if they want any other questions answered, you know, I'm working with those folks right now and, you know, playing around with it. So if you get any questions that you don't see, what you folks don't see and want to ask more questions, you know, give them a call, and they'll certainly take the time and answer everything, because they've got it wrapped up in one big package.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
All right, take care.
Okay, great. I really want to thank David Koretz for coming on. He's the CEO of Blue Tie. It's a terrific product for a small business. We're going to take a break, back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray. We've got Brendan Cooper ably manning the controls for us. I'm Nick Francesco, and you are, of course, listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Wow, so that you can understand. Now back to Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Brendan Cooper.
And this is Soundbites. Back to the phone. Oh, wait, what? Nope.
No.
Not back to the phones?
The one thing I promised to tell folks, and it's literally going to affect everybody.
Everybody.
I don't care if you got a computer or you don't.
Right.
You know what it is? It just happened in the news.
Meteors striking the Earth, bringing back the dinosaurs?
No.
Okay. None, I don't know.
How about daylight saving time?
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. I was going to talk about that at some point.
What folks don't realize is because even my wife said, why are they waiting until 2007, you know, to do this change? Why not just do it this fall? Well, if you've got a VCR sitting at home, or you got any type of device that is automatic, it has a little chip in it that automatically flips over and compensates for daylight savings time, once they add this extra month of daylight savings time, it's going to get messed up.
Yeah.
So literally, it's giving all the folks out there that had these particular devices, especially even computers and VCRs, time to adjust, because they literally have to remodify the chips. So instead of, say, on the last, this fall, it's usually, Halloween weekend that we
It's the last Sunday in October.
Yeah, we fall back. Well, now that's going to be even a week later. So they've got to recalculate the number of days that will be set for daylight savings time and the number of days will be on standard time. And those chips all have to be changed because this is going to be the new standard. So we have more daylight.
Did this actually get passed?
Yes.
Yes.
And it will be taking effect as of 2007. So all the chip manufacturers have to make these changes. And like I say, your VCR and everything else is going to be a little squirrely after 2007, especially if you've got an old one and they don't have a patch for it.
Remember that the bug in Windows 98 for daylight savings time? If you happen to be awake at 2 a.m., the computer said, oh, it's daylight savings time, I'll set your computer back to 1. Then an hour later it says, oh, hey, it's daylight savings time, I'll set your computer back to 1.
Well, the workaround, I think that's going to be for most folks that have, say, machines that they just bought this year, is the easiest thing to do is once that goes into effect, if they don't have a patch out there for it, is you can go into the time and settings and turn off the automatic, you know, daylight savings time little check mark, and you'll just have to manually update it. Like when we do go to daylight saving time, you're going around changing all the clocks.
Well, here's the
there's
problem.
Always that one you miss.
Well, here's the problem that I have with it. It means that for an extra month, kids are going to be going to school in the dark. I have a real problem with that.
But it's light later at night, so the one news story I was just reading says that for Halloween. No, it always changes before Halloween, so you're trick-or-treating in
What they're doing, though, is they're only adding 1 week in November. The other 3 weeks are going to be, instead of April, it's going to be in March. So we're springing forward.
What?
Yeah, they're only adding it a month. And 3 weeks of it is going to be, instead of March, springing forward.
Right? Instead of April, it's March.
It's going to be March instead of April. And then instead of being the last week, Sunday in October, it's going to be like the last Sunday, first week in November.
The first Sunday in November.
It's only 4 weeks that they're adding.
Even so, there's 4 weeks when kids are walking to school in the dark. I have a problem with that. I'm sorry, I have a problem with that. Too many kids are getting killed on the highways to begin with, and I think it's going to be worse.
There's a lot of coalition.
Well, the main thing they did it, though, was originally daylight savings time was set up for the farmers anyways.
Right, right.
And for the war, so we didn't have to burn, you know, lamp oil.
Right. I think if, you know, we got to do it. We really do have an energy crisis, and we need to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of sites around the internet trying to end daylight savings time because it doesn't do anything more for us now.
Right, that's true.
There's some states in the U.S. that don't even can do it.
Yep.
Right. All right, anyway, back to the phones. We've got David high on a mountaintop in Pennsylvania, patiently listening. David, are you there?
I'm here.
Are you in a different time zone?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
See, I told you. No, he's south. He's not like east or west. South maintains the time zone. Take a look at a map. We'll talk to you later. Poor Dave. Dave's in living in his own universe. Maybe in his world, south is a different time zone. I don't know. So anyway, David, if you had children, where would you take? Oh, you're not even in Rochester, but so what? Where would you take them this week?
I would probably take them to perhaps Newfoundland. Anything to get out of this heat.
But you're high on a mountaintop. You've got cool breezes.
I got to tell you guys, I oftentimes tell you I can look up and see Corning.
Yeah.
Forget about it. I can't see more than like 2 miles out there. The haze,
yeah.
Bad.
Yeah, it's got to be tough. What's your question? You got a laptop question.
Yeah, I do. You know, guys, laptops notoriously are built out of a lot of special stuff as compared with desktops, okay?
They're proprietary.
Right, exactly. I don't have a lot of knowledge about this, so I'm hoping maybe you can guide me a little bit. What two or three brands of laptops are the best of the worst? And what I mean by that is at least have the most number of internal parts that are somewhat standardized.
None.
And not just completely
none.
Weird.
The only thing that's standard is the hard drive, and that's a 2.5-inch IDE, although there's some that are 9 millimeters tall and some that are 12 millimeters tall.
And anything you would plug into
RAM.
The PCMCIA slots or that sort of
fare. Right, as an extra. The RAM is almost always SO DIMMs, but different menus.
DDRs, too, now.
Yeah, now they're using DDRs.
But, to get short on your answer here, David, there are no common parts. What David's basically saying is if you buy a desktop machine, one of the reasons that you get the quality from local vendors that you get the same quality from local vendors that you get from national vendors is because the parts are so common. Mm-hmm. Everybody buys the same motherboards. Everybody buys the same
hard drives, video cards.
All of that stuff is the same. So one of the reasons that we feel so comfortable in saying go to a local vendor is because you get better service and support from somebody who's local. When it comes to laptops, however, a lot of the benefit of common parts goes away because every laptop is built to a specific proprietary set of dimensions. So you get a different motherboard in every make. You'd get Dell versus Toshiba versus HP versus the local white box company. I'm talking about one Dell model versus another Dell model. They all have proprietary motherboards, proprietary this and that and the other thing. Take a look at any four motherboards. The connectors aren't in the same place. They may have different types of connectors. That all means you've got a set number of things that goes on there. In addition, you get that screen is a huge cost. And because they don't have the number, you know, when you make a motherboard for a desktop, you make a billion of them. So they end up costing a lot less. When you make up a laptop, you only make a few million of them, and consequently the cost of each one has to be more. And that's one of the main reasons that laptops cost so much more than desktops. But I'm sorry, David, there is nothing common among most brands of desktops.
I appreciate that. Can you take a brief Vista question?
Yeah.
I'd like to know, and I'm going to hang up and take your answer over the air if I may. I'd like to know, there's been a lot of talk with this new Vista operating system about it having copied some features from the, I don't even know the names, but, you know, from Apple. I guess it's the Mac OS, but I don't know that.
Sure.
Okay, I'd like to know, what are the two or three most important features that you guys think have been lifted from Apple? And if you could just describe them very briefly, that'd be great if you have time. I'm going to take your answer over there. Hey, thanks a lot for your answers today, guys.
Thank you very much, David. To preface this, Vista is the new name for Longhorn.
And Microsoft is already being sued by three companies that already own trademarks on Vista.
Right. but Vista is the purported new name for Longhorn, the next version of the Windows operating system. It's supposed to be called Windows Vista. We'll see if that lasts.
And if we even see it next year when it's due.
Late 2006. Early 2007. Right.
But in terms of things that it's taken from other systems, let's start with search.
And it's always rough because the concept of searching your hard drive is pretty generic.
Right.
Whether, you know, Apple's brand name is Spotlight, so Microsoft is going to have a different brand name.
Right. And Google offers a desktop search tool. There's a product called Beagle under Linux. That stuff's been around forever.
Yep.
Right. A lot of it goes back to even the first versions of Windows, the general Windows icon mouse pointer that Microsoft changed just enough to get around copyright laws. And the early lawsuits between Apple and Microsoft went back to an agreement that a very new CEO, John Sculley, made with Bill Gates to allow them to license bits of the Macintosh interface. And the final lawsuit tally was that of the 180 points that Apple sued on, they were all covered by this license agreement, so Apple lost the suit. But it's conceptually, every time a new version of anything comes out, it's going to see what's working on the other guys and try to implement something similar. So one of the big things in the new OS 10.4 is the Spotlight search program, which is sort of a live typing. Now with Windows, you open your search window, you type your search key, you hit enter, and wait for the search to finish.
Right.
With Spotlight's live searching, as soon as you start typing a letter, it's already finding files. So the theory is by the time you finish, or even before you finish typing your search word, you know, penguin, it's already found the document you're looking for. And it doesn't just search on file names. It also searches on the contents of files inside the metadata. So if you went to a web page about penguins, something in that web page said penguin on it. So it's going to find that web page, too.
Right.
So a lot of it we don't quite know yet about Windows Vista because it's barely an alpha. They just announced the beta is going to be available sometime next month for developers to be able to try. So we'll see if there's any specific implementations and then, you know, let the lawyers decide.
Right. The big three things that Microsoft's been touting are the Avalon graphics subsystem to do great graphics.
Which is similar to Apple's Core Image.
Yeah. Right. The Indigo, which is a web services architecture to help all the web stuff that you do.
Apple uses Apache.
And WinFX, which is their database-based file system. All three of those have been pulled out of Vista. in order to ship it already 2 years late. So those will be added back sometime, we think, in 2007, the way it looks right now.
Yeah, Vista Service Pack 1. 2008, maybe.
Right, right. Yeah. So one of the things they've talked about, and I'm trying to find this because I only ever heard it once, they were talking about multiple desktops. And I truly don't know if Vista's, well, I know that it's supposed to be in Avalon, but I don't know that it's going to be in the regular operating system.
And that's been common on Unix since the beginning.
Since the beginning. I mean, you can, I can click Alt F1 and have a desktop, Alt F2 get a completely different desktop, Alt F3 get a different one. I can have as many as I want if I have memory for, so it doesn't matter. But those are the features that we know of. I mean, they've talked about a lot of things, but we don't know how much of that is really going to be in the thing and how much of that is sales speak. We'll see in a month or so when the actual beta hits the street. We'll know what's really in there. Right now, what people have are alpha releases. Some have features, some don't have features. Some of those features will be removed. Some will be left. We don't know yet.
Yeah, too early to tell.
Unfortunately, it is it is too early to tell. Our next caller is it's Gary from Clifton Springs, New York, and not Clifton from anywhere else. It's Gary from Clifton Springs. Gary, sorry about
guys.
That.
How are you doing today? That's all right.
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, not too bad. I've got a question for you.
Well,
before
you do that,
okay.
I have to ask you, if you had children, where would you take them this week?
Where would I take them this week? Well, last week we were at Hershey Park.
Oh, great place.
We were down in Pennsylvania, and they are on the same time schedule we are up here.
See, Dave, South.
Yeah, I missed a lot of people.
I survived the Super Duper Looper when it first opened.
Yeah. Oh, did you?
And that, 20 years ago? And now that's kind of a lame roller coaster.
I loved Hershey Park. What a great place.
That is cool.
Well, it was. Anyway, but the question I have is, I purchased an HP 1315 printer on all-in-one, and I tied it into my Windows 2000 machine. And for a while, it seemed to work fine. But then what ended up happening is whenever I turn the printer on, it tries to reload itself.
That's actually a fairly common issue with USB devices. Windows does a USB auto detection every time you plug in a USB device and says, oh, hey, you've got a new USB device. I'll load drivers for it. It doesn't always see that you've already got that one installed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Especially with Windows 2000.
Yeah, Windows 2000 was pretty iffy in general about USB.
All right,
XP is much better.
So the best thing for me to do is probably tie the printer into my XP machine then
and
share it over the network.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, less headaches. Driving me crazy.
Yeah, it's be less headaches for you.
Have you checked HP's website to see if there's a driver update for 2000?
I did. I went online to try to get it. What I did is I actually uninstalled it, went into the registry, cleaned it all up, and reinstalled
the
driver.
Yeah, but they're not. There's a lot they're not doing for that. So because Windows 2000 is So yeah, your best bet is to hook it to the XP machine. We got to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray. We've got Brendan Cooper on the buttons. We're gonna have Lou. We're gonna have Marcy. We're gonna have John. All waiting patiently on the line. We'll be back to them in a moment. I'm Nick Francesco, and this is Soundbites, and you're listening to us on 1180 WHAM.
Wham's Rock. It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Brendan Cooper.
And this is Soundbites. We have Lou from Fairport waiting in the line. Lou.
Thank you for taking my call. I run Windows XP.
Yep.
I have Roadrunner, and I've not been able to get on the internet unless I restart it lately.
Restart your computer or restart the router?
Yeah, I have to restart it because if I try to hit the internet on, like if I come home from work or something, it doesn't go on. So I have to restart the computer and then I can get on just fine.
The computer doesn't start?
I don't get online.
Okay, so basically, let's say you get up in the morning and you get online, and then you go to work.
No, I can't. I can't because the computer's because I keep my computer on all the time.
All right, wait.
Yeah, sure.
Let's say you get up in the morning and you can get online. Let's start at a place where you can get online.
Sure.
So you get online, then you go to work, and when you come home, the machine is still on, it's still running, but you can't get online unless you reboot.
Absolutely.
That's what you're saying.
What happens when you try?
Nothing. I use either Mozilla or Internet Explorer, and it just says can't get online.
You know,
the screen that pops up, or the Mozilla one that says cannot be found. Google can't be found.
Right.
So that's something then.
You're using Roadrunner.
Mm-hmm.
Are you using AOL?
No.
You're straight to Roadrunner. When you log on, when you reboot your machine, you don't sign on to anything. You're just on the internet automatically.
Yes.
And you run Spybot and Adware?
I run Adware, Spybot. Norton does every week. I do the check of the scan.
Sounds like the DHCP is timing out too fast, and he's losing his address.
Yeah. Do you have your own router in there?
It's just the Roadrunner box.
You might want to try shutting that off for a few minutes and restarting it. Because it sounds like... See, what happens is the Roadrunner box gives your computer an address to get to the Internet. Mm-hmm. If your computer can't get to the Internet, it likely means it's not getting an address.
Are you running Zone Alarm?
By any chance?
Yep, I run that all the time. Well, yeah, it's on all the time, of course.
You could try temporarily disabling that, because sometimes the firewall settings get too high and doesn't let things you want to get out.
Yeah. That's why it's one of the settings in there accidentally.
Is there an internet timeout lock on Zone Alarm? After X minutes, it locks you down?
Yeah, you can do that.
This has just been starting in the last, month or so.
Well, if you updated Zone Alarm.
It's possible that setting got turned on. Inside of Zone Alarm, there's a setting for after X minutes of idle, lock the internet down. And the point of that is so that when you walk away from the computer, in 10 minutes, your kids or somebody can't come up and get to a site they're not supposed to.
Is it possible that it just starts to happen because it's like it never happened?
It could be because of the updates.
Some update enabled that feature by default.
Right.
So that's something to try, at least. When you can't get on the Internet, instead of rebooting, try disabling Zone Alarm temporarily and see if you then can get on the Internet.
It's not possible. It's the Roadrunner box, right?
It could be that, too.
And resetting, turning that off.
The problem is you got to do a lot of, you got to do a bunch of
investigating.
You got it.
Okay, thanks a lot, fellas.
Yep.
Thank you. Is that music I hear in the background? No. Okay. Our next caller,
it's
holy
the music
cow.
That's always in your head.
That stuff. Yeah, sometimes I can't hear the music because the voices are so loud. Our next caller is John calling all the way from Long Island, New York. Welcome, John.
Hi, how you doing, guys?
Good. How are you getting us in Long Island? Heck of a skip.
Right? The conditions must be good. Through the Internet. There's a gentleman, I don't know if you ever heard of him, his name is Rover, and he put together a little XLM program that lists all the different computer shows. Very convenient. You look up the time and you click it, and that's it.
Nice.
Great. Where is that?
He's going to kill me, but I don't remember the URL. But I can email it to you. And
yeah,
you
please.
You just download it and make it. It's like an interactive TV guide.
Cool.
For computer talk shows. But I really like your talk show.
Thank you. Where are you on Long Island?
Suffolk County.
Sure.
Yeah, you familiar with the area?
I used to live in Jamaica.
Oh, okay.
That's in a different time.
That's in a different zone.
That's a whole other world.
Yeah. And go ahead, John. Tell us. I might fall into my old New York accent,
That's cool, man.
I'm not laughing at you because of it. What's your question? You got a new computer purchase question?
Here's the question. I mean, people are talking about the new dual core processors.
Sure.
Some of them are talking like they're the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Yeah.
And
they will be eventually.
And that things I read that they're going to even stop making single core after December.
Sure.
I wouldn't say that soon.
Right.
They'll keep single core around for a while because they're cheaper.
Yeah.
Right. The other thing is that this is a really weird rumor. I don't know. Okay. Some companies are saying since it's a dual core, they want you to pay price for double licensing.
Yeah,
Microsoft does
true.
That.
Yeah.
If you have a two CPU
true?
Machine.
I mean, that sounds so unbelievable.
Listen, John, you may want to hang up, but we have to take a commercial break. When we come back, we will talk about all these rumors, explain what dual core is, and talk about this interesting rumor John has heard. John, if you're on the 800 line, stick around. We'll be back with Dave and Steve and Brendan and Nick and John and Marcy and John and Marcy and John and John and
different time zones.
Different all their time zones. John's out on the zone of Long Island doing whatever he does out there.
Is that another country?
It has been. I've lived there, and I know all about it. And we'll just be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to us over the internet. You're listening to us. Some of you are podcasting by the time you hear this. John's listening over the internet. You're all live. This is Sound Bites, and most of you are listening to us over 1180 WHAM.
Answering your computer questions for over 15 years. It's Soundbites with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Brendan Cooper.
And this is Soundbites. We're going to go back and talk a little bit about and give you some background on what John was talking about before the break. A dual-core processor. When you buy a computer, you usually get one CPU, one computer chip. It's a Pentium thing, or a Pentium 3, or a Pentium 4, whatever that is. And that is your processor. If you want twice as much processing power in a single box, you buy a dual processor motherboard. That is to say, it puts two CPUs right on the motherboard, two Pentiums or two AMD K6s or whatever the number is.
High-end video, high-end engineering.
Right. Those are the people who really need it. Now, a dual-core CPU, basically you just get one CPU chip, but inside it is really two independent processors. So you really get two for the price of one. Well, two in the package of one. The price is still pretty much two.
Right, and a lot of customers are finding out, especially in the high-end world, Microsoft Windows software, especially server software, Oracle server software, they count a dual-core chip as two CPUs.
Right. Now, it depends on what it is. Now, IBM came out with the first one back in 2000. That was the Power 4 chip. The Power 5 chip, of course, is out now. Intel has their 64-bit x86 system. AMD has had the Opteron. They came out earlier this year. The Athlon 64 hotbox. I have to have an Athlon 64. Mm-hmm. That came out at the end of May. Motorola has a couple. So they're out there. And what happens is this. If you have an operating system that or a program that charges by the processor, for example, Windows XP, Windows Server, or Oracle, then that right now they're saying the dual processor is the same thing as multiple processors. Now, for those of us who run Linux, we don't care. You get 50 processors in a box, and it'll just
So if you have a two dual-core processors, that really means you have four processors,
right,
and they're going to charge you four times
John,
as much.
The thing of it is, so the bottom line is right now, yeah, it's all great technology, but there's not a heck of a lot out there that you can really take advantage of.
For the average user.
The average user, so just, you know.
I'm afraid unless you're running Linux, then it all works. We're done for another week. I want to apologize to everybody to whom we did not get. I want to thank everybody who called in. We'll be back next week. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray, Brendan Cooper, who really kept us together this week. I'm Nick Francesco, and you've been listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Thanks for listening.
Planning for that new